Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Joined by Conrad Black, distinguished biographer, writing at the National Post about the election imminent in Canada, if I understand correctly. But I want to begin with Conrad's thoughts about the election confirmed by the inauguration of Donald J. Trump to be the 47th president of the United States, and the presentation Mr. Trump made in his inaugural speech. Conrad, a very good evening to you. You know the president well over the years. You have been with him in the thin times and the thick times. What did you make of his presentation during the inauguration and how it was received? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. Yeah, look, I thought it was a pretty hard-hitting inaugural address. I mean, I've read a lot of them historically. I mean, of course, some are famous. Mr. Lincoln's are famous. President Kennedy's is famous. Some of Franklin Roosevelt's are famous. But normally, it's a more kind of uncontroversial, upbeat kind of address. But to accuse, I mean, his four immediate predecessors were sitting there, and, he had no use for any of them, really, and vice versa. But to accuse them of betrayal, I mean, I found it rather refreshing in a way, but I sort of wonder if that's quite the tone you want to give to a thing like that. But with that said, the rest of it, I mean, apart from the severe criticism of preceding administrations, and not that I disagree with it, I just wonder if, historically that's not how these things have been done, but he's the president, he can say what he wants. But I think that the general aspect of energy and purposefulness, and I promised to do this and I'm going to do it and I'm starting right now and so on, I think in general it was electrifying and very encouraging. Without being partisan about it, the outgoing government, leaving out the fact that I didn't agree with most of what they did, the whole atmosphere of it was elderly and lethargic and cautious and kind of amorphous. And here you've got strong leadership acting at once to enact the program that they have promised if elected, and doing it in a very energetic, emphatic way. And I think that sort of energizes the country. And I think even foreigners appreciate knowing precisely what the United States is going to do.
A great deal of energy in the speech, and it's gotten even more energetic since then. We're going faster and faster. Your thoughts about the president making himself so comfortably, casually available to the media. It's really ask me anything. I'll talk about it.
Look, I think it's awfully good because not only was the previous method of having predetermined questions answered, so he had a list in front of him, I'll ask Mr. Batchelor of CBS, or I'll ask, Mr. What's his name from CNN, something Tapper or somebody. But instead of that, it just given Trump's hostility to the press and in general their hostility to him, and the fact that 95% of the national political media were hostile to him in this election, I think it's a good thing he's answering their questions. They're being polite, even if their opponents are being polite, which they were not always polite in his first term. So they're putting their questions respectfully, as they should, to the president, whoever the president is. And he responds frankly and in a good-natured way and quite revealingly at times. I think that whole atmosphere is very good and is helping to settle down the sort of temperature and tone of political discourse in the country, where you can at least have a civil exchange and reporters can politely put their questions and the president frankly answers their questions.
Now we turn to the imminent important election in North America almost immediately, and I want to walk through what to expect. The two candidates that you note in your most recent column, Mark Carney of the Bank of England, a citizen of Ireland, the United Kingdom, and Canada, I believe, and Christian yes. Freeland, the editorialist, the newspaper reporter, who turned into an extremely agile member of the Liberal Party cabinet, both as deputy yes. prime minister and as finance minister. Those are the two candidates.
And foreign minister also.
And what to expect over these next days?
Well, it's a ding-dong battle between the two. And she's, of course, been next to Justin Trudeau, the most prominent minister in this government throughout the last 9 years. And he is claiming to be an outsider, but he's in fact been a close collaborator of Justin Trudeau's for the last couple of years. And he was well-known earlier to that government when he was the governor of the Bank of Canada prior to becoming governor of the Bank of England. But he's running as an outsider on a kind of radical green program. He's extremely preoccupied with climate change and has very tendentious ideas about the level of sacrifice we have to make to reduce fossil emissions. I personally think the whole thing is nonsense, but there it is. That's his view. And Chrystia Freeland is not someone who appeals to conservatives other than when you compare her to Mark Carney. They're both capable, well-known, accomplished people. And one of them is almost certain to be the new Liberal leader. And that is a party that historically sometimes has taken total outsiders and sometimes has moved for the person who was the second member of the government when the prime minister retires. So there's plenty of tradition for both. But what happens is when the Liberal leader is identified, Justin Trudeau goes to the chief of state of the country, whose title is Governor General, and hands in his resignation and recommends that whoever the Liberals have chosen as leader be invited to form a government. Now, it is generally felt that, and in that event, the Governor General invites that person to form the government. It is generally felt, though hasn't been absolutely pledged, that whoever it is will then ask for and automatically receive the dissolution of Parliament for new elections in about 6 weeks. If that is what happens, then the elections will take place in about 6 weeks. If he doesn't, or she, if it's Chrystia, if whoever the new leader is, accepts the invitation to form a government, they have to call Parliament at once and have a vote of confidence. The whole key to government in the parliamentary system is whoever commands a majority in the House of Commons. And whether we're talking about Britain or Canada or Australia or other places, and even France, now they have a president as well, so it's a different system in that way, but the parliamentary part's the same and are very similar. So if the new Liberal leader is supported by a majority, then that person can govern until they have to hold an election in the fall. But all of the opposition parties, the official opposition Conservatives, Yermann Poilievre, and the unofficial opposition, the New Democrats, a socialist party, and the nationalist Quebec party, they have all said that they will not support any Liberal leader to fill out the term. That once they have the new leader, they're all sitting there very politely waiting for the Liberals to choose a leader, and Parliament is not sitting. So it's all perfectly composed that way. But they have all said that as soon as the Liberals have a leader, they want an election. And so, assumedly, either the new prime minister will ask for dissolution for an election, or will go back to Parliament and receive a no confidence vote and then ask for an election. But all of the odds are now that we will have an election in May.
Conrad Black for the National Post. I'm John Batchelor.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.